code. Tonight we dive a little deeper into Maeve's code. William and Logan make their first visit to Westworld. Well, actually, William does. And what's that secret conversation Bernard is having with Dolores? All that and more. Join us on the conversation live on Westworld Season 1, Episode 2, Chestnut, next.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
There we go.
That okay. Upcoming yeah, song can right. only mean yeah. one thing. There we go. The robots there are on go. Strike. The hosts are on strike. What is up, everybody? Welcome to Westworld Season 1, Episode 2, Chestnut. I am JC Rubio. Follow me at JC Rubio TV all across the board, and let us introduce our wonderful hosts, starting with the lovely lady across the table.
Hey guys, I'm Joelle Monique. You can find me all over the internet at Joelle Monique, and every week at blackgirlnerds.com.
Hi, I'm Dave Child. You can find me at Mr. Dave Child and also DaveChild.com.
Excellent, and a quick shout out to Carrie Lane, who could not be with us this week. And before we go any further,
she's decommissioned.
She's decommissioned. Yeah.
She's temporarily decommissioned.
Yeah.
We do have to take a step back first because we were missing who I called last week, our Oracle.
Yeah.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, definitely.
Excited. To go over some things, one, I saw the first two episodes, not the first four.
Right.
Which would have been really awesome, but I did a panel for HBO. They sent me the first two. It was really cool. But now we're all caught up. I'm the same page as everybody. But I really like the Westworld series. The pilot was amazing. It was kind of... It's hard. I have to wait because we're still getting some shows coming out, but it might be my favorite pilot
yeah,
of the year.
It seems to be like a huge breakout hit yeah. like this time around, this fall
HBO's
season.
HBO's third highest rated show in like... Yeah.
It's a base premiere in over 3 years.
There we go. That's what yeah. I knew there was a three in there. Yeah, stunning. Stunning work. Best shootout, Western shootout I think I've seen in a long, long time cinematic
right.
or televised. And these characters, and then of course... the direction was just wonderful.
Yeah. The pilot was just, it felt like a movie. It felt like if it was just 30 minutes longer, it could have just been a movie and wrapped up. And it was just perfect. And so I was real curious to see how the second episode was going to be and to see if it was going to be able to maintain that momentum. I think it did. I thought it was great. And I like that you got to see more of the world in this second episode, so I'm excited to talk about it.
See, for me, it was actually kind of the opposite. Before we go any further, we do have to shout out our chat roll. Please chime in live. You're our fourth mm-hmm. host tonight, so we've got Cat G, let's see, Goo Wealth, we've got Ryan Whittleson, all sorts of people. Chime in, let us know, we'll shout it out live on air. But for me, I didn't like the second episode when I saw it the first time.
We were
really?
Talking about this.
Hold Look. On. But then I fell in yes. love with it the second time I saw it.
Okay.
It's weird because that first episode was a classic to me.
Right.
What you guys already just said, it felt like a film.
Yeah.
And what I realized was that the first episode was, for me, it was more world building in the first episode, and the second was more about the characters. We're diving in deeper into, let's say, Maeve. We're learning about William and Logan. We're going a little further, like Bernard and Teresa
yeah,
and all this
yeah.
But for me, I was at first caught off guard because I thought I'd have a little more action. But then the real action was what was being said and not said in the second episode.
Well, between the first and the second episode, we get the parallels that Frank is kind of talking about in the meeting when he shuts it down. He's like, we're not going with this Red River storyline. And it's all spectacle in the first episode,
right.
which is fun and dazzling. But now we're getting into stuff that surprises us and makes us think a little bit harder about ourselves because you start to see what you could really be doing in this world. Would you choose the black hat or the white hat to go
right.
in on? So I think it's an appropriate approach to this storyline. It's good to go really bold, and now we get to see, like, what might you do in this space now that you know all of the options?
Yeah, it's also good to finally meet someone who's a guest of the world and wants to go the white hat route.
Yeah.
Because we already met like Ed Harris, who's the ultimate man in black.
Yeah.
Sure.
And is really black hatting it like crazy. And we got in the first episode, we thought we met a guest who's a white hat, which is James Marsden's character, but then he ended up being like a robot and mm-hmm. a host himself. So it's nice to actually. In this episode, we meet these two characters that mirrors the old 1973 movie perfectly, because that's mostly about two white guy rich characters who are now guests on of Westworld and that we're supposed to be following the entire time. So it was interesting to settle back into what the original movie was. And I was curious to see how where they're going to take those like characters now that we've met them.
You know, there's a question I'd love to ask. Okay, we see that Logan's in the Black Cat, of course, and mm-hmm. William in the White. My wonder is, you become consumed by this world, and I imagine almost drunk with power.
Right.
I'm waiting to see a clash between friends, a white hat versus a black hat, because there's booze involved, there's things involved. I wonder, once you're given into those devices, who they become. Because remember, they always say it's who you become while you're here.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting that Logan kept saying, like, well, we're going to find out who you really are.
Right.
Who you really are is what, and they have like a corny tagline when they're talking about developing games about how the real mission is to discover themselves. But I thought it was funny that Logan kept forcing him away from the storylines he wanted to pursue.
Mm-hmm.
Like, William really wanted to help out the blind guy and maybe go get a treasure and do all that stuff. But,
well, I think Logan's just hell-bent on proving that his friend is not square and not as straight-laced as he pretends to be in the real world. I think that when he came to Westworld, he discovered in himself, like, oh, there's a bad guy in here, and here I can enact that without consequence. And he's looking for his friend to find that freedom, but that's not... It's not at all what he wants to
do. Well, let's take it a step further, because they're more than friends. He's about to become his brother-in-law, from the sounds of it.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Remember, he said his sister has been here, Logan's sister has been here on a trip before, and she's had a lot of fun in the park as well, so he might as well, too.
Yeah.
So that's what I found interesting. So I'm excited to find out what William especially, because we're so used to seeing Lyle the intern, Jimmy Simpson, play these darker characters from It's Sunny in Philly, to see him have something like this.
He plays such a good asshole, and it's kind of exciting to see him open up, and I wonder if we won't see a reversion back to that later, maybe.
Right.
Like, maybe the world does get him. It'll be interesting.
I'm kind of hoping they don't. I'm hoping he stays a white hat for as long as possible, at least, because I feel like that's an easy storyline to pursue. Just have him get corrupted by Westworld.
Absolutely.
So I'd like to see that might happen, and it might be interesting to watch, but I'd like to see him maintain that white hat. And also, I think you also saw with Logan and William, Logan is fully not recognizing any of the hosts as humans anymore. Doesn't see the robots as humans, is totally dehumanized them. Well, William is not there yet. William just sees fellow humans and still has empathy for everyone. So it's curious, like, maybe he'll get rid of that empathy and turn into a black hat, but I hope he maintains it.
It's funny you say that, Dave. That was actually my biggest takeaway the whole episode.
Mm-hmm.
I was angry watching it. I'm invested. I love the host. And time after time, scene after scene, in this episode more than the first, the dehumanizing of the host. It broke my heart. In the smallest, we'll get into it in the recap, but there are these little things that they did, and we are so conditioned to just maybe see past it, but there were little gestures. Even William was guilty of one as well.
Right.
Where they were just treating the robots as less than, as subhuman, basically. So,
well, they're not human, they're robots.
I know they are.
Yeah, but they're also just on the verge of gaining a consciousness.
Are they, though?
I think they are.
That's the crux of the series, I believe.
Here's the thing. They've set up, especially in this first episode, a whole lot of parameters where maybe not. Like, the whole, like, when they're seeing them down, they're like, oh, these are your past lives.
Yeah.
Reemerging. Oh, well, we've programmed them to have memory. So they're drawing back things that have just kind of been subdued. I think that they've created a very convincing human. And I think that there's somebody behind the scenes pulling strings.
Right. I think in this episode especially, it's revealed that maybe the glitch that's coming out is on purpose.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It seems like there's a virus or someone's hacking into Westworld. But with that phrase where...
these violent delights have violent ends. Definitely seems like a trigger command, as we've been hearing these verbal commands.
Yeah, and it seems like a worm that's kind of jumping from host to host.
Mm-hmm.
And there's definitely an immediate physical reaction on the host when they hear this.
And then that activates their past lives, and it activates their memories, and it activates kind of a consciousness and existential, like, trauma that pops up in them, which means I feel like they're turning more human. I feel like they're starting to deal with the singularity. So I'm going to be curious to I'm saying curious a lot because that's what the show is. But I feel like it'll be interesting to see where this hack is coming from, because I could even see it coming from a intelligent life itself.
I see it coming from within the company. We've seen help me out. Jeffrey Wright's character's name.
Bernard Lowe.
Thank you. Bernard whispering into the dad's ear right before they enter him into freezing at the end of the first episode. Mm-hmm. And then here he's having private conversations. It's definitely feels like, and we already have so many connections to God and like Frankenstein's monster with the creation. It really feels like he's about to take his creations and shift them in another direction. And he needs to do it in private and in secrecy.
Do you think that's Bernard himself?
No, obviously him and Frank are working in tandem.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if Ford quite knows what's... That's what I kind of assumed.
Sorry.
Is if he knows about this, because he does feel like he's very much God in this episode. Mm-hmm. We see him playing with a snake and kind of dealing with building a chapel even. Mm-hmm. And he's such a godlike character. And there's been I was talking to a friend recently about how there is a Satan character right now, which is Ed Harris's Man in Black. And he seems like the Satan that's kind of rampaging through and trying to find the secret to the creator's, trying to find a chink in the creator's armor, mm-hmm. which brings up some questions where a friend of mine had a theory that maybe even the Man in Black is like a robot that has hacked the system.
Correct.
But I don't think that's the case. I think it's a human.
Right now we're just as confused as probably everyone at home trying to figure this out.
Speculating a lot, but I like it.
Yeah.
And from what I've heard, that we're going to feel like this maybe another episode or two, and then I think everything starts falling into place. We start learning a little bit of the rules.
I'm totally fine staying out here in what's happening world. It's fun to speculate, and it's fun to see these characters kind of just give you just the smallest bits of hints. And then, like, I was watching it earlier with a group of friends, and they all had different opinions on what was going on. And I think that's what makes this show fun to watch.
Absolutely. Right. Now, and I want to bring up, you brought up Violent Delights. Well, let's start with our very central character, I think, this week was Maeve.
Yeah.
And we open up with Dolores whispering Violent Delights, you know, and...
Have violent ends. And seeing flashes of everyone murdered in the street.
Mm-hmm. So was this what caused Maeve's downfall throughout the whole episode, where she needed to be upgraded, just worked on, narrative, made her an aggressive Maeve? We see her going how many times in this episode?
Well, it feels like it's the same virus that went into Dolores' dad and is now sitting kind of dormant in Dolores. And now it's spread to Maeve, which means I feel like it could spread to... And they even said in this episode that it can... it can catch on. They're worried that a glitch might
be contagious,
mm-hmm. and then, like, in a manner of speaking, because they're like, that'll never happen. But it feels like
biology, guys.
Yeah. So that's what's happening with Maeve, and you see that she's also having these nightmares that they program in to explain any past memories that might pop up. That's missed by any of the people cleaning the bodies and forget to wipe clear the memories. And if they pop up while they're in sleep mode, then they can say that's just a nightmare, just a dream, and continue on their robot ways without realizing that they're robots. So, or that they have a past life. And so we see with Maeve that she has this past memory of the Man in Black coming in and killing her, as well as a bunch of Indians destroying her family.
Mm-hmm.
And when she wakes up, she wakes up behind the scenes. And maybe I'm jumping far ahead.
No, that's fine. We're talking about everything that happened to Maeve. And I wanted to maybe even backtrack. Would that mean that Dolores is the Judas steer?
I think so. I think we brought up in the other day.
Or Jesus, depending on how you see her. I mean, is she savior or is she condemning all of these people? And it seems to me like... she's on a pretty righteous path. I mean, especially with the killing of the fly again at the end of episode one, to coming in here and starting to touch and awaken people. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess she could be seen as the devil character too, turning people on against their god.
in the previous episode, she points out a steer and says that that's the Judas steer.
Oh, guiding them. Okay, I got you guys now.
Everyone leads, that's what leads them into slaughter, or leads them, and you can pick those out. And it was a very suspicious thing to say in a pilot.
Yes.
So it was like, oh, and I think you're right. I think that means that she is the Judas steer. And she's, but she's controlling everyone to go in a direction.
Correct.
But the question is, who's controlling her? Because there's things being left for her.
Mm-hmm.
That we find out at the end of the episode, just jumping right to the end, just to follow her storyline, is she finds a gun buried in the dirt that she knows is there. And that brings up the question of, we have guns that don't kill humans, but she finds a gun that's buried in the dirt. Maybe that gun kills humans, which is, I think, possibly what's going to happen next.
Damn it, Dave Child. Oh, my gosh. No,
I mean, right? I mean, isn't that the obvious? Yeah.
It makes sense. Makes sense to me. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Moving on to the bloodbath. I'm excited.
Yeah, and I think that's what's going to lead. So that's why I'm hoping that William maintains his innocence, because if shit goes down, or if crap goes down, whatever you want to say, if stuff goes down, I think it'll be nice to have one person who is a good person that could be a good human. That needs to be saved from that.
Yeah.
Because right now, all the guests are just terrible people.
You can say they're all shades of gray, but William is our white horse.
I don't think they're terrible. Again, if it's a robot, it's a lamp that can talk, essentially.
That's true.
So they're going to just get out, like, things you never thought you could do that aren't harming anyone. Like, at the end of the day, you can walk away conscious cleared and have an experience. Or you could just go for, like, the historical context of it. Like, it's like going to Disney World.
So do you think are you saying, like, going on Splash Mountain is the same as just raping Dolores in the beginning?
I think...
You know what? I hate to stop you there. I'm so sorry, but we don't know if he raped Dolores or not, because he shut the door. We're led to believe.
We're led to believe.
Rewatch the scene, because I know we're all under that assumption, mm-hmm. but when he closed, we don't know. You know,
true, he could be the one putting the Judas steer in her.
That's what I'm saying.
Kind of programming it.
And to tail off what you said, Jonah Nolan and Lisa Joy even said, at the top level, even Rodrigo Santoro said it during the red carpet premiere, that if you're just looking at everyone being good and evil, it's not going to work that way.
I mean, that's very true, especially since they are just robots, but at the same time, they program them too well.
You have to wonder how long, like, is this idea just implanted in Dolores?
Uh-huh.
Because I tend to feel, since she's the oldest and they make such a big deal about her being the oldest host there, I wonder if she hasn't been doing this for much, much longer. I'm wondering if her dad is, like, maybe she tried to awaken her dad and he just didn't adjust well to the information.
Oh.
Her dad got wakened up by finding the photo.
But she knows his path. Dolores has seemed awake since we've seen her waking up in her bed. She seemed the most alert and aware. And even in some of the crisis moments, she seems to be thinking. You know, and we even get at the very, I think one of the very first questions they ask her is, have you ever lied to us?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's the slightest pause and then a no. I get this feeling that Dolores has been awake longer. Like, I don't think it happened in episode one. I think it happened before we started the series.
That could be true, but I still think it's being programmed by someone outside of the
system. Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's a question of who. And is it Bernard? Because it seems like Bernard is having these private meetings and knows that something is different with Dolores.
Right.
What do you think Bernard whispered into Dolores' dad's ear right before he put him away?
I don't know.
I've watched that scene, like, maybe 30 times.
Oh.
Just going back over because I wanted to know. And the only two words I can make out are "for now." That's the only things I can really hear.
Maybe you're just here for now?
Yeah. All I can hear is "for now." And it's toward the ends of his whisperings when they go from that kind of medium shot to a slightly closer one.
Right.
I really think he's storing up. And again, we have the whole questions in the first episode of, like, we're not quite sure, like, what these people want, like, as far as the upper management wants. I've heard everything from super soldier to new age spies. I mean, if you release these things into the population as spies, who's going to know?
Mm-hmm.
I've heard things of, like, space exploration, like, crazy out there
theories.
Mostly people think military. Because that just seems kind of the obvious choice.
Because we also don't know where Westworld is. Is it for some reason, I assume it's off planet because of the word world.
Really? Wow.
I just assume.
Really? It could be like a super huge Epcot Center or something.
I just thought Nevada, like a dome Nevada, but I like the idea of it being off planet.
I don't know. I kind of expected, maybe this is just me going into my own head, but I almost pictured it as like a satellite that's kind of a Truman Show floating around the Earth, maybe.
I love it.
So one possible theory, and I know this is mostly getting into predictions and stuff, but whatever. One possible theory of maybe what Ed Harris is actually trying to do is he's trying to, because right now it seems like he's just trying to find the ultimate Easter egg in a game.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's trying to take control of the world in order to kind of reinvent it in his own image and create his own world, maybe that's to make it better for everyone else to kind of come in or leave Earth.
And see, I get this idea that he wants to assimilate into the world. I don't get, like, godlike status.
You get more of a devil thing, or?
I get more of a, I want to be a part of this world. Like, I feel apart from it. I don't feel fully in it because I know it so well. And there's this another level to this game that he's requiring to be there. Even though we don't really have a lot of evidence of there being anything deeper.
Right.
The guy creating the story, it's like, it's just titillation. I mean, obviously we have our god figures in the background doing something extra.
Yeah.
And I think that's what he's kind of looking for, whatever their other layer is. But it seems like he's looking for the subtext of the game, if that mm-hmm. makes sense.
Yeah, but I'm wondering why it's not just something that he could go and get from Ford. Because it seems like Ford programmed it into the game. So he's playing a game that has all these Easter eggs. And maybe this is just because I'm just finished reading Ready Player One. But it feels like, you know, it's like where that whole point of that is just finding these obscure Easter eggs in a big, massive
game. You want to 100% the game. You want to get it perfect.
I think that's what he's trying to do.
Yeah.
But I'm going to be a little disappointed if that's it. If, like, as soon as he finds the Easter
girl,
egg.
Look, when creepy children show up, I'm like, things are about to get serious. And when that little girl just looked up after her mother has been shot, and we know that the host for, this is real to the host on some level, and she's just like, the maze wasn't meant for you. I'm like, it's going down. I'm ready for cults and secret things. I'm ready for old stories to be brought up. Like, I really feel like, I don't think they're going to let us down. Like, I feel like Jonathan Nolan has got this. I feel like he's got us and is supporting us.
Please well, it feels down. Like it still has to have a sci-fi lean to it, right? Well, so it still has to be.
Chime in because the fans are, you know, mm-hmm. putting in their two cents as well. We have Alistair Allen saying, talking about the world. Yes. Hello, Alan. He's saying the complete lack of detail of the world outside is probably really important.
I think so, too. Mm-hmm. I was going to say this could be in a future where the world is in terrible shape. And this is a bubble that they've created where there's actually good environment. And
are we going like a stage past like Interstellar? The planets are possibly dying.
Yeah, the planet could be dying for all we know, and Westworld is maintaining because it's outside of the world, maybe. But mm-hmm. we also see the only idea of like an outside world is what we see when they arrive, which is just kind of a very pretty Apple Store subway.
Right, which is technically just the beginnings of Westworld. It's like the lobby of Westworld. Right. And what I like about it is, like, there is, because we're seeing it from the robot's perspective, there is no outside world. There mm-hmm. is just Westworld. Even to the employees, they say in episode one, like, you can't, when are you leaving next? Like, when do you get to go out next? We hardly see them outside unless they're getting cigarettes or, like, just trying to soak in, like, vitamin D for the last, like, 20 minutes the sun is out. I don't think a world exists outside of Westworld. Like, I think there is an Earth and stuff. I personally hope we don't ever get to it. I'm not really interested in, because it seems so average to me. Like, people keep coming in and saying, this is the best vacation ever. And, ooh, that one looks really real. He's perfect. Like, there doesn't seem to be a lot of distress about the state of the world outside of Westworld.
That's true. Mm. They keep coming back.
Because like, they're coming from somewhere where.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a big question.
And we do see something that looks like a Times Square in that little photo.
Right.
Yeah.
That kind of flips that first robot out.
So. Right, right. Present day. And before we leave, I know we were talking about Maeve and we kind of drifted off a little.
Yeah.
But that was my theme, especially what she had to witness at the very last scene when she was trying to escape. And she was scared out of her wits, had a hole in her stomach, and she ends up seeing, and I see Teddy there.
Oh my god,
Teddy! And what they were saying, can you imagine if they recalled everything we've done to them?
Bing. And it's clear the father is doing that to me. Like
the father's doing.
When he's the father in the first episode is having his meltdown, mm-hmm. and he's like, the things they do, I have to warn her. I have to warn her.
Right.
He can remember. I get the sense that Teddy is starting to put things together.
Yes.
Much more slowly. He doesn't seem he's been awakened yet, but you see it in his eyes as he's kind of more quiet and leaned back. I don't mean to keep calling back to the first episode, but I think we lay a lot of the groundwork where he's sitting on the porch and he's like staring out into the world while the guy, like, it's clear he's thinking about Dolores, you know, but he can't be with her because he's forced to just go where the humans kind of direct him.
Sure.
Yeah. So I definitely think that they're...
Yeah. Also, I think this is, just for the record, I think this is the type of show where we can keep referring to past episodes because
yes.
they're going to replay scenes over and over again in different ways.
Alan said again, the specific shot of Anthony Hopkins moving his feet in the dirt seems to indicate that the entire park is artificial. I really like that point.
Yeah.
It does definitely seem like, if not artificial, at least built on sinking ground, which
yeah, is and important. Also that the park, the kind of behind the scenes is below it because we see Anthony Hopkins mm-hmm. go up mm-hmm. a elevator that goes into the middle of nowhere out there. So... there's at least that whole system is underneath the park, which means they have to build on top of it or dig under.
Right.
So
right.
I feel like it must be all artificial. But I also wonder, because we also found out more about the world in this episode, where they warn the incomers, the guests, that if you stay in the center, it's totally normal mm-hmm. and you're be safe. But the farther you go out, the more difficult the kind of games and the world becomes.
Which puts into perspective some sorts of things, because in the shootout from episode one, there's not a lot of fear from the guests.
Right.
Like, it's so timed, it's been advertised, it's a big thing, like, come see the shootout.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. But it's still a lot of carnage, but, you know, then they're like, there are bandits out in these woods. And Dolores' house, which she's clearly set up to be the damsel in distress, however you want to play it, yeah. is a little further out. And then here we get the man in black going way far out
yeah,
to this kind of like cantina
small,
area.
Yeah.
The
small kind of Mexican town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see like kind of what their standards of gruesome are, too. Because I would think that a shootout that graphic and with that many deaths would be a little... Maybe not the center of town.
Yeah, well, and we also... I think that's kind of the big fireworks in the middle of Disneyland.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I like that it sets the tone of, like, if you can't... Like, this is mild to us. So those outer edges, which we know we haven't reached yet, and they say... The one guy says, you know, I've never reached the end of Westworld.
Yeah, right.
The hell is out there? And we know there are cannibal parties, but I'm thinking even worse.
That's the second time they've alluded to that as well.
Bring on the cannibal.
Did you guys have a chance?
Bring on the cannibals.
I'm ready.
No, if anyone goes to the website, discoverwestworld.com, it's got that disclaimer as well that mm-hmm. you could be, you know, follow the possibility of cannibalism and whatnot. So you keep mentioning that. So
yeah.
I believe we will be seeing some... Oh, my God.
And
I can't even say it.
We did get a sense of one of Maeve's memories as being like... surrounded by Indians, and I feel like that's kind of the more savage out there side of it.
Yeah, and they keep referring to, like, you can fight the savages and things as being, like, a big draw for people, which, first of all, disgusting.
Problematic.
But second of all, to just, like, raids like that are kind of terrifying, and then to see the black man in the black show up mm-hmm. right afterwards, like...
Yeah.
How much control does he have? Control, or was he just there? To me, if it felt so ominous on a level of more than he was just happened to be there.
Well, let's dive into the man in black. I know we've been talking about it here and there, and we've kind of been sprinkling, jumping around a little bit. But mm-hmm. the man in black said he feels like he was born here, mm-hmm. and just all these things. And you were talking about the little girl who gave him the clue. You're already laughing. Okay, I'm ready for this.
Sorry.
No. Okay. When the little girl tells him to go to the trail where the snake lays its eggs, mm-hmm. could that be paired with where Ford is going to be, where he stops the snake?
I would. If it's not, weird choices, writers.
Yeah, exactly.
It seems like there's definitely some kind of parallels there. We didn't see a nest, so maybe that's not exactly the spot. But we understand that he controls the snake, and I think maybe that was the important takeaway.
Yeah, and I also think it was the biblical kind of nod was also there. And also, I think it might have been a red herring, because I think we might find that the snake is actually not a snake. It might just be, like, a rock formation or something that looks like a snake with eggs. Or it could be,
oh, okay. Yeah.
Or it could be like an actual snake that lays eggs, or like a giant snake pit.
It
looks
very poetic. It could definitely be more symbolic than literal.
Yeah.
But what, I just feel like the Man in Black is like the ultimate Disney fan. Like, if you know somebody who's obsessed with Disney World and has been going there for like 30 years and mm-hmm. they have their season passes and they go every other weekend, that's what he feels like to me, which is, it's hilarious because they're two wildly different types of people. But an obsession with the park, I've seen that person before, and I understand his desire to be like, no, this is the best place ever. Like, I can be exactly who I want to be, uninhibited, and I get everything I want right here at my fingertips. Like, and I love this place. I never want to leave. I think that's a really interesting character to kind of dive into. And I'm wondering if we don't get... Like, I really want to make parallels to Disney World. Like, Disney World has secret clubs and restaurants and things. Like, I want VIP experience here. I want, like... people waiting to maybe not ride rides, but to have certain experiences and like VIP line fights.
To me, it seems like a video game. To me, it almost seems like he's like, when I was a kid trying to beat like Castlevania or Ghost and Goblin, and you keep playing it and you keep playing it. When he had that shootout, I don't think that's his first shootout.
Oh no,
with Lawrence's family, he even said it, and he finally got it when the little girl gave him the clue.
Mm-hmm.
He finally got to the level by shooting Lawrence's wife.
And he says, "I know the toonie whistle when you piss, but I didn't know you had a family."
Mm-hmm.
And I guess because they've created that many layers, and because we know of obsessive video game culture, it makes sense. This character makes sense in this world. Like, he's doing like the high
score
dive.
He's the high score guy, and he's been going there for 30 years and he knows the game.
He's beta tested. He knows what's
up. He knows what's up. He can really get into it.
Well, let's get it. You know, we haven't even touched upon everything going on at Delos somewhat, you know, like Elise programming. And Elise's character I find kind of fascinating because
I love this girl.
Yes.
I love her.
You know, and what I wanted to find out is she knows, I mean, she's the plucky one. She's in Westworld itself. She's in behind the scenes as well. She floats back and forth. I want to know, because I'm alluding to what we saw in the previews coming up, because she stumbles across some stuff in the coming weeks. And that's what I want to find out. Where does she lie in all this?
I feel like she's a worker bee
who's
very vested in her job and could probably be trusted later. She clearly has the same affinity for the bots that we see from Ford and Bernard. They, like, you know, she makes sure that they don't get sent down.
A little less, because she's also someone who uses them when she can, like when she goes and kisses the prostitute from the first episode, or kind of doesn't have as much respect for the creations, I think, as Bernard and Ford.
I would agree.
Oh, okay.
So, and she's just a little bit, because she's more interested in the science and kind of making sure that everything's working.
She's clearly the programmer of the group as opposed to the creator of the organization. Like, she wants to make sure they're working efficiently. She cares that they are doing what they need to do, but at the end of the day, it's just programming.
And she works on the codes and stuff. Yeah, she writes code.
Because I just really want to explore the staff there, because we got to learn a little bit more about Teresa Cullen and Bernard. Okay.
It makes everything in episode one make sense. All of their... They
really?
Have, dude, go back and watch episode one. They have the longest loving looks. The little nitpicking he does, like, with her with her eye twitching.
That I thought was interesting, and I kind of was a little disappointed when they were in a relationship, only because I like how Bernard dehumanizes her in that first episode by saying, "I wish we could take that trait and put it into robots."
I want to make more of you is a romantic statement.
It is true. That is true.
I see, like, the fact that he's seeing this very little detail. It's like, to me, it was more like, it was with secret flirting. It's like, we can't let other people know, but I want to tell you right now that I see what you're doing. Did you know that you do this? That's how much I watch you. That's how much I've observed you.
Yeah.
Okay, so that falls into an interesting little point here. The fact that he's noticing these little things, but at the same time, he is a creator, a programmer. Mm-hmm. Could Teresa possibly be a robot?
I don't think so.
That would be I would be so mad if she is a robot.
No, the only reason I'm saying it is just because he's always looking to upgrade, and he's picking up from her. Oh, and you would almost act, she's a very by the book character, you know, like by the book at work. She's a very almost, I don't want to say this because I don't want to take away from her if she is human, almost robotic in a sense.
Okay, two things. It would be really interesting if she was a robot, because they put a robot in charge of policing the robots. That's an interesting thing to me. Yeah. But I would not like it if she was one, because one, it, to me, it takes away a lot of what he's doing as far as loving these creatures and sending them out there in the world and seeing how they program them and getting them back and kind of tinkering. Mm-hmm. And three, I think it'd be very strange if he was sleeping with one of the bots.
I just think, I think there is... My big one of the fun things about watching this show is trying to guess who's a robot.
Right.
Yes. And I feel like we are going to eventually find out that one of the people behind the scenes and is a robot. My big guess is it's actually Ford himself.
That's what I was going to say. Please let it be.
Yes,
that's why that because would be so dope. Because I think that will be the singularity in itself, mm-hmm. because the creator is creating robots, and so robots are creating robots.
Mm-hmm.
But and I can also see that being the case because of the connection with Bernard. Mm. So I feel like Bernard maintains Ford. Because he's downloaded all of his memories or something, because he's lived so long and now he's just a robot.
Okay, wait, can we move into the child that we see Ford
with? Exactly, perfect. That's where I was going to go. I
definitely think that is Ford as a child, Ford as a kid. As a robot.
Because it's like the only British kid, too, right?
Yes, yes. He's in knickers and he's out in the middle of nowhere, and we have no idea. He's like, I'm here with my family, but... Yeah, and then he dismisses him with what, again, seems like a command phrase that we've been seeing them have throughout the show, so... I really think that's him. And then the next question is, why does he need, like, to actually converse with child self to feel like he's getting the best creativity out? Is this, again, is this a Disney thing? Because Walt has all these, like, memorials to his parents throughout his park, and it's him connecting with his child self. I'm wondering if that's not the same thing Ford is doing.
We get, on the chat, we have Alan saying, Alistar Alan, saying all the people behind the scenes could be robots, but that means there are no humans except for guests. But, you know, who knows? Maybe.
That's a wonderful thing. I don't think it's true, but it is. Kudos, HBO.
I love the idea. It's like, oh, yeah, they're all robots, by the way.
It's all robots.
There's no...
I mean, and Freddie N. follows it up as well. Bernard definitely gives me the robot vibe as well. So
that's true.
The beauty of it is that we are all still guessing. We're going to be guessing for the years to come, and you had a revelation.
Bernard as a robot makes so much sense to me, because I think... Ford is going to be the in-between where he's enhanced himself with robotic parts because he has this whole speech in episode one about wanting to, about this being the end for humans. Like, we can't go further. So this is the next step in evolution since you can't, I mean, maybe you can upload your brain and make yourself a robot, but my guess is that he's enhancing himself, keeping himself alive longer with robot parts. But if his Bernard is like his Pinocchio, like his crafted son... image of himself that he then, you know, that would be
that's what I think,
so cool.
That's what I think Dolores is heading. I think she's heading in the very Pinocchio route, because I think she's someone who she's recognizing that she's different, but she's hiding it well enough that I think she's going to end up leading a robotic rebellion, but also becoming more human in the process.
You definitely get that sense when you hear that remember echo for Lion King-esque moment.
Can I ask, okay, when you hear that voice, at first glance or listening to it the first time, I think it's Bernard, but then if you listen to it again, it doesn't sound just like Bernard's voice.
Yeah, I couldn't quite figure out who that was. I thought maybe it was her father. The first like robot that was her father, but I'm not sure who that voice
is. It almost seemed like it was like a modulation of Peter Abernathy and Bernard as one. Go back, because I listened to it. I was like, it sounds like Bernard Lowe. It also sounds like Peter Abernathy, but I don't know which.
I cannot make a distinction. Yeah. I do not know.
I'm trying to think. Did we touch upon Dolores? Anything we may have missed?
One thing we didn't talk about is whatever Ford's next. Storyline.
Yes, thank you.
Because you see this black chapel that's not quite. It looks like it's almost buried in the dirt.
It's very weird.
It's very weird. Mm-hmm. So,
it kind of looked like an oil rig at one point to me before we reached the cross, and I was like, "Oh, that's kind of a cool idea to do an oil rig in the West, and maybe like somebody's discovering oil or something." And then we got to the cross, and I'm like, "Okay, now this kind of has remnants of a burnt down church to me."
Right.
It's very weird.
It makes me think that his next direction, because one of the things that he said when he was poo-pooing the Odyssey on the River, is that it's too much of an action-adventure, and what they need, it needs to be more existential and needs to be more seeking inward who you are, which makes me think that his next storyline is going to be trippy as hell. I think it's just going to, like, kind of break the boundaries of... just being Western. I think it's going to turn into something else.
And I have the line quoted here. It's, they come back for the subtleties, the details. And I thought that was such a great line because it, I don't think it was just within the show. I think it was also about the viewer. That's what's keeping us coming back. Mm-hmm. That's the beauty of the show. I absolutely loved it.
We're watching a show about a show.
Yes.
About people playing like a game.
Well, and putting it on. It's a very All the World's a Stage kind of philosophy.
It's like the most involved Twitch channel. That's what Westworld is.
All right. Any final thoughts before we move into some news and predictions? Great episode.
I'm ready to get into predictions.
Batty, I got a prediction. Should give teach us master classes because holy cow, the whole one thing we have to talk about is just her discovering all those bodies, which I briefly touched on.
Right.
But I've never gotten a more Holocaust-y feel in a not Holocaust situation before. The showering down of just the naked bodies strewn out everywhere, the factoriness of it. Oh, and one other thing I like about these kind of secondary workers that we're seeing, if you've ever worked at, you know, like a, well, if you work at a minimum wage job and this is your job day in and day out and you're not dealing with the humans, cleaning but things you can literally command, of course you become disassociated with the work. Of course you don't, like, and you get lazy. Like, and it just felt like such a natural kind of human laziness of like, no, whatever, man. Oh, crap, she's awake. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, and one other thing. Did Dolores reprogram herself? Because she mentions, you know, to come out of a nightmare, I say 3, 2, 1. She's having the nightmare of being scalped. Yes, thank you. She's having the nightmare of being scalped. And then she wakes up on the operating table. She counts down to get out of it.
Yeah.
That seemed to me like she rerouted her programming.
Well, that's because she now has that worm in her from the Violent Delights, like, kind
of. So, but I'm trying to figure out the scope of that. Like, so can you can wake yourself up now, which we understand to be huge because they are able to put them under and ask them questions about their programming all the time. I'm wondering how much more of that there is. I'm interested to see.
And recalling their past lives.
Yeah.
And kind of, and that also made me think of Alien Abductions when she woke up, too.
Yes.
It made me realize that. Because that's a lot of people's theories about alien abductions, is that they're just people who created us kind of checking in on us, rather than it being aliens being like, what's this? Let's poke it.
Poke and prod.
Just being kind of like, oh, this is broken. We need to fix this. And that's what a lot of people think alien abductions are.
All right. So let's move into some predicciones. We actually got a nice sort of comment, that too. Do some predictions. We've got Darth Brundle Fry, who says, in the 1973 original, movie technicians in the control room said the robots of the park were created by other machines, and they did not know how they worked anymore. They were so complex.
Which is called the singularity.
Perfect callback.
Yeah.
Tying it all in.
And yes.
So, okay, let's get into what do we see in the weeks ahead. I freeze-frame some stuff because I'm a bit of a nerd.
Yes, let's bring it up, please. Right.
Okay. This is what we see. We see Maeve picking up a doll, which appears to jar even more memories.
Mm-hmm.
We see that. We also see some, because they gave us so much stuff here, Elise stumbling upon something deeper than just a glitch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, let me do a third one here. Let's see.
There was another one that I remembered of, like, a costume. You see a lot of these costumes.
Yes.
Like, this whole room that looks like it's in back behind the scenes of the park. And they're costumes, but they don't. To me, it looks like they didn't fit into the Wild West. It looks like they fit into, they had this Mardi Gras feel to it, possibly could fit into a Roman world, which makes me wonder if there are other worlds that they're going to hint at that are maybe decommissioned and now they're just focusing on West.
I didn't even catch that on the preview.
And see, I know, I'm not 100% sure of what this moment is, but we see we have another costume change where Dolores is in pants, which to me signals great transition. Which I'm excited about.
So maybe she can play another character, or is she starting to rebel?
Well, to me, it says rebellion. We put the pants on, moving into rebellion. That's how I read it, but
pants on, rebellion on. Yeah.
And you actually see this in the previews as well. Now, I hope it's not spoilerish. If it is, please, we'll see you next week. But before that, I want to say, you also see her getting up close and personal with William.
Yeah, you do.
True.
Yeah.
True.
Getting her back on.
Well, one thing we saw was William saw the damsel in distress and was like, I need to save her.
Yes.
Let me get my white hat on.
Yeah, which is why I kind of hope that William stays, is going to have to be saved by Dolores.
Mm.
That's what I'm hoping, because maybe there's a rebellion. It starts to kill off people, except for the one kind of innocent dude, which is William, and he needs to be saved by the hero robot. Again, there's going to be shades of gray, so that might not happen, but That's
my got a last one before I turn it over to the fans.
No, the pants thing just absolutely.
The pants awesome. Is pretty strong.
Send us your predictions. Go to YouTube. Go to iTunes. Let us know what you think. Let us know what's going to happen to Dolores, William, all of us. But let's get out of here. So, with that said, where can they find the lovely lady to my left?
Hey guys, I'm Joelle Monique. You can find me all over the internet at Joelle Monique, and every week at BlackGirlNerds.com. You can head over to NerdsOfColor.org right now to see my review of Birth of a Nation.
And you can find me at DaveChild.com or at Mr. Dave Child, MR Dave Child, on Instagram or Twitter.
Nice. And you can follow me at JC Rubio TV all across the board. So, for the lovely Joelle, Dave, I'm JC. We'll see you next week. Goodbye, everybody. Bye. A deep slumber.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
These violent delights have violent ends.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.